Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24 month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown.
The Grenfell Tower fire, a firefighter's view. In the early hours of the 14th of June 2017, a fire began in a kitchen on the fourth floor of a 24-storey block of flats in West London. A fire that should have been contained ripped up the outside of the building within minutes, and it resulted in the loss of 72 lives. Yet, this was not the first time something like this had happened. The breakdown of what called compartmentation had caused a loss of life. Tony Sullivan is uniquely poised to give his point of view because he was, for many years, a fireman. He's written about it in a departure from what he normally does. The book is called The Grenfell Tower Fire, A Firefighter's View. Delighted to welcome back to TRE, Tony Sullivan. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have
good
you
morning.
With us. Normally, we've spoken about history, but obviously, and your work in sort of Roman and what's referred to as, incorrectly, the Dark Ages. This, just explain a little bit about your background and why you're qualified to write this book, Tony.
Okay, well, I was a firefighter for 31 years, and I retired the October after the Grenfell fire. And then for the last few years, I've got into writing historical books, which is one of the ones you kindly had me on to talk about. But I've always had this nagging thing about Grenfell, where I feel, and a lot of firefighters, I think, feel that quite a lot of it has been misrepresented in the media. Some of it deliberately, some of it just because it's just easier to present it in a more simplistic way. And some of the issues are a bit complex. And I think sometimes we miss the point.
So let's just start, because we know the devastation, those images. I mean, I came into the radio station that morning and, you know, we got large screens everywhere and couldn't believe what I was seeing because I used to live pretty close to that part of London itself and went, my goodness. Is it, in all the sort of the horror and then the political fallout and people finger-pointing and wagging, and was it a question of funding? Were not people not listening to the right people? You know, and were the fire service just saying, listen, we've been saying this is going to happen for years?
Well, certainly a little bit of that. The analogy I use at the start of the book is the airplane industry. If you imagine a simple bolt, and if they dumb down the manufacturing of that bolt, it'll be picked up in the manufacturing stage. But if you dumb down lots of different items and then you dumb down the inspection stage, then it pushes that down into sort of the building of the aircraft stage. And that's fine because it'd be picked up in inspections. But if you dumb that down as well and then dumb down all the maintenance and then you get rid of all the engineers and you get rid of all the people who inspect things, it then gets pushed on to the actual planes and taken off. And then eventually, if you've dumbed down everything in the chain, you'll start getting near misses and accidents, and eventually a plane will crash. And then when it crashes on a specific council building or somewhere, to blame the council, they may well be complicit. The government may well be complicit. But if you've spent 20, 30 years dumbing down across several different governments, it's pointless to blame, it's missing the point to blame the government or the council or that particular airline or that particular make of plane, when it's so systemic and deep across the industry and across everything. And I think that's the main point I'm trying to get across.
So, I mean, what we're looking at here is it's not just, you know, one person or one government doesn't do this. This is a thing that's been ongoing for years because of the way that we have been a market-led economy, and people are trying to get the because it's I mean, again, I know very little about from what I saw, Tony. So, is it the cladding which is the major thing? Because it's all this fires going up the cladding, and
yes and no,
right?
Yes and no. I mean, all right. We could talk about the fire first.
Yeah.
So you've got a fire in a flat in a kitchen. It should be contained to that kitchen, and there was a fire in Grenfell years before, and it was contained to the flat. That's how compartments are supposed to work. It's supposed to contain the fire for a length of time.
Are these like bulkheads on a ship then? Is that the sort of idea?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah,
okay. Kind of. So each flat is self-contained and should keep fire out for, say, an hour. And that's why you have fire doors. But the way the windows were constructed, people forget about the windows. If the windows had been constructed correctly, the fire would never have got to the cladding. So basically what they've done is they put this new cladding on. They pushed the windows out, so it was from the old wall onto the cladding, and the gap between the windows and the old wall, they filled. You're supposed to fill with non-flammable stuff, and then cover it with non-flammable. But it got filled with flammable material and got covered with UPVC, which is flammable, and that allowed the fire to spread from the kitchen, the original kitchen, through the windows, through the gap in the windows, to the underside of the panel. So then you got the next stage, which is the panel, which everyone saw. Again, if you'd have had proper fire stopping, I mean, I don't agree with these panels being on these buildings, but if the panels had been contained around all six sides of the panel, the fire wouldn't have got inside to the flammable core. But that wasn't the case. The panels had a gap where the fire could get into it. Again, if you had fire stopping every few feet, then only one or two panels would have been destroyed. But because that wasn't the case, so you see here, it's a catalogue. It's not one thing. It's a catalogue of things. And then the fire goes up the building. And then because of the windows, the fire gets back into the flats. Now, even then, once the fire's in the flats, those flats are affected. So long as the fire doors hold, then it won't get into the lobbies. But now we find out, of course, that the fire doors were not correct fire doors. So a lot of the fire doors to the flats failed within 7 minutes. So now the fire's in the lobbies. And that's fine because you've got smoke vents, which will get rid of the heat and the smoke, but they all failed as well. So you've now got a situation where the fire's got outside, which is bad, raced up the outside of the building. There've been fires where it stayed on the outside of the building. But in this fire, because of the windows, it got back inside the flats above. It then wrapped itself around the building and got in all the other flats. And then it's got into the lobby. So anyone trying to get out of a flat that's unaffected, if they open their door, they'll be confronted in the lobbies, and there were, apart from the thick black smoke, there were recordings of 1,000 degrees in the lobbies on certain times, 1,000 degrees. And if you think about it, your oven, when you stand too close and you open the door, it's at 200 degrees. So you can imagine what 1,000 degrees feels like. You're not going to go through that lobby. So it was a whole catalogue of errors. To do with the building and the way it was designed, way the refurbishment was done. But you've got to look back 30, 40 years at all the things that contributed to that. Because the other issue is, I'm at risk of going on.
No, that's fine. Don't go. You just brilliantly worked out that explained to me how the fire spread so quickly and the ridiculous and then 1,000 degrees. I mean, poof.
Yeah. And the other issue is, of course, the it's not just one building controller, building inspector who's passed those panels. It's hundreds of building inspectors have passed hundreds of panels on hundreds of buildings. So that should tell you. It's not the panels. It's not an individual building inspector. It's a systemic problem within building regs. The building regs are such that they allow building inspectors to think that these panels are okay, when in fact they're not. And not just the panels, all the other stuff I've mentioned as well.
So this was a problem that goes back, as you said before. It's not one person. It's not one industry. It's not one faulty panel. But describing those bits. I mean, the fire doors don't hold. There's the wrong, I know nothing about building, but to put flammable material on the outside of a building probably isn't a good idea. The fire doors don't hold. The smoke ventilators don't hold. I mean, presumably as firefighters or, professionals, you must have thought to yourself, this could go catastrophically wrong. And it did.
Yeah, I think from Well, I should make the point that firefighters are not fire safety officers. Right. These are two different beasts. I think a lot of people assume we're fire safety officers. Now, a lot of fire safety officers were firefighters.
Yeah.
But most firefighters are not fire safety officers. So they don't have the knowledge. And I think sometimes when people ask firefighters, or the inquiry was asking firefighters, they assume that firefighters would know everything about building regs, which they don't. So quite a lot of stuff that I've read, Peter Apps done an absolutely fantastic book, Show Me the Bodies, about this. I'm as surprised as anybody to hear that, you know, Class A is basically about fire surface spread of flame.
Yeah.
That so long as you can pass a surface spread of flame test for a certain length of time, it's fine. So if you've got a panel that's got highly flammable material inside, so long as the outside protects it for a certain length of time, that's fine, even though the edges are unprotected. But that's just crazy. I think that's crazy. To go from a system where we used to do build a rig and do a test to, oh, you can do a computer simulation. As a layperson, I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert at that side of the things. But for me, it sounds wrong. It sounds wrong to allow a computer simulation. You know, your whole fire safety is reliant on a computer simulation.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that. But you've got to look back to, so if you think about, I mean, I've talked about the sort of the drip of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back at the legislation, so 1980s, they brought in private building inspectors to relieve the pressure on, to allow more buildings, to relieve the pressure on council, local authority building inspectors. Okay, you can understand that, but that brings in like a private element to things. That's fine until you privatise BRE, which are the guys who do the testing. And then you think, you privatise that, so now you've got a kind of conflict of interest where businesses are going to BRE and saying, pass my panels. Are my panels okay? Well, BRE, I would argue, because they are now private, they want repeat business. The danger is that they will pass things that they maybe wouldn't have passed 20 years before.
Mm.
And then there's a huge push for environmentally friendly stuff. And it just so happens that the panels with the more flammable stuff, they score better on the... what's the word? I can't remember.
The environmental, the green standards, yeah. Basically, because
yeah.
They are...
So, there's a push. So, whilst in the past, so you, the great fire in London in 1666, the year after that, so that's like 300 years ago. We were smarter 300 years ago. They passed the law, no more flammable stuff in London. So, we were smart then. The Romans knew. They had fires in Rome, and they passed laws. And yet, all the legislation we brought in, we had some of the best building regs in the world, I would say.
Yeah.
We were good, and we had a state where situation where you could have the safe work policy, which was successful for decades, and then somehow in the last 20, 30 years we've forgotten all that, and it seems we've gone backwards, and it's like, oh yeah, don't worry about that. You know, there's a whole thing about external spread of flame, and they've just forgot about it almost. And you look at the people who refurb Grenfell and all the other blocks up around the country, and you think, well, how is it that no one in there seems to know the concept of compartmentalisation? Compartmentation.
Yeah, it's a tricky word, Tony. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
How is it that the people who fitted the windows weren't aware that you have to have non-flammable material around the window gaps? They clearly didn't. So, you know, something has been lost. So knowledge has been lost and gone downhill over the last 20, 30 years.
Because that's perhaps the thing, isn't it? Because it is before, when it was, if you like, the council's job or the authorities, perhaps you'd had somebody who was in their job, you know, for 40 years or so and would know about it. But if you put it out to private tender, then you're going to get, and with the greatest respect in the world, you know, the thing about privatisation, which was, you know, the rage and, when Maggie took over in 79, everything got privatised. And it was going to free up the markets. But for things like this, you would think that perhaps it's not such a good idea. It's like privatising the first service, isn't it? Basically, it's saying, okay, well, we can put your fire out cheaper, but we're going to get a couple of lads, who've done a 2-week training course.
Yeah. So they privatised BRE, and then I think personally, and again, I'm not an expert at testing materials, but I think they've dumbed down the testings a bit. And then they brought in 2005, they brought in the Fire Service Regulatory Form Order, which basically It's almost like MOTs and cars. So you're responsible for getting your own MOT. So whereas before the fire brigade would go around buildings and say, you must do this, you must do that. Then it was a case of you get your own, you risk your own premise and you do your fire risk assessment. You can get someone in to do it or you can do it yourself if you're competent, but they don't define what competent is. So you've got all these people now, council blocks, they'll get someone to go in and do a fire risk assessment. And my personal opinion is that I saw a deterioration of standards in the standard of blocks of flats. Mm. So whereas before I would do a visit, I would be sent down there by fire safety. They'd contact the local station. You'd go down and do a visit. You'd see a number of defects. You'd report it to fire safety. 3 months later, you're sent back there to check them. And back then, we'd all moan, oh, it's taken 3 months to do this. Little did we know that, like, years down the line, they bring this thing in. You're then going to blocks of flats where the blocks are a disgrace, really. And nothing is done for years, so long as it's on the council to-do list. And because they've also dumbed down enforcement, not only have they dumbed down standards of maintenance, they've now also dumbed down enforcement, in my view. So now you have fire safety offices, which have got maybe, you know, you've got like, if you've got 20 cases on your table and you're told, we can only really afford to prosecute one of them, you can only prosecute one of them. Mm. So what do you do with the other 19?
The thing is, Tony, I mean, you know, you're going in there and checking these buildings out and going, and again, oh, God, it takes 3 months to get done, you know, and then you're groaning about that. But, of course, when the proverbial hits the fan, it's... Because it's all very well to say about, you know, okay, we you know, prioritising, but these are lives. And I'm not just talking about the lives of the people who are in there who know nothing about this. They don't know. They're just told it's environmentally friendly. But also, when it all goes proverbial up, you know, you guys have got to go in there, and that is you can do all the cost cutting you want to do, but at the end of the day, you must have had there were warning signs that had been smaller blazes, hadn't there, before around the place?
Yeah, right. So this is, I mean, the Lacknell House fire in 2009 was the big one. When I was writing this book, obviously I was watching the inquiry, and I was in training for 9 years. So training is the place where you would get, if there was some new thing or new threat, you'd get information. I never, ever got this information. In my research and in reading Peter App's book and in the inquiry, all these fires came to light over the last 20 years in high-rise blocks. So there was one in, the first one is 1991 in Knowsley Heights in, I think, Liverpool. There was one in Scotland in 1999. There was one in Salford in 2005. I was in training from 2003 to 2012. At no stage did we ever hear anything about dangers of panels and high-rise blocks, ever. So there's a failing of the fire brigade. We know now that the fire brigade hierarchy did know about this, because there was a PowerPoint all the senior officers saw, which had all these fires listed on it and various others around the world. So they was aware of that. But obviously there's stuff going up much higher than them, there is evidence where they've sent letters and said this is a danger, and you've got people in government and in the Home Office or wherever it is, it's all, you know, basically not dealing with it and allowing the situation, because they've spent 20 years in not just allowing people to put these panels on these buildings but encouraging it. They've actually been saying, yeah, this is a good thing, it's environmentally friendly, we need to tidy up these buildings, let's put all these panels, it'll be great and everything will be lovely, whilst at the same time the left hand is dumbing everything down. And at the same time, you know, I mean, we'll talk about the fire brigade and how we do things in a minute, but it's like a perfect storm. It's like a number of threads all coming together and creating a perfect storm. And I think the issue with the residents of Grenfell, they made a lot of complaints leading up to the fire. But I would say you've got two issues here. You've got one is the maintenance and the standard of the blocks, which is one problem, but the bigger problem, which contributed to the fire, was all the stuff about building regs and what I said about the windows and the panels. Well, they never made any complaints about that because they wouldn't know. They couldn't know any more than the firefighters doing inspections. You wouldn't know whether a panel was flammable. You wouldn't know that someone had cheated the test. We'll get onto that in a minute. You wouldn't know that some of the certificates weren't worth the paper they were written on. You wouldn't know that. You'd see a panel. You might ask, "Is that has that passed the test?" And you'd be told, "Yes, it has passed the test." And you'd be like, "Okay."
If I get in my car and put a seatbelt on, I am putting my faith that that has passed the crash test, and therefore I don't have to worry about it. And that's the same sort of thing. So if you, you know, you go, if you're a fire put man, you're going to think, okay, well, or you're going to think that these are past regulations and therefore they are safe.
Yeah. And then you'll find out when you, I mean, I've put it in the book. A lot of it I've got from the Inquiry, but also from Peter Rapp's book. You'll find that some of the tests were not worth the paper they're written on. And so you can blame the companies, fine. And I can understand people wanting to blame the companies. But the fact is that the testing regime is such that it allowed people to do that. So it's not just the fact that people cheated. It's the fact that the testing regime itself is such that it allows that. These are the ones we found out about because of the loss of life here. That, you know, think about how many hundreds of times this has happened across the country in other blocks, in other companies.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is the tip of the iceberg. And if we end up just focusing on Grenfell, as important as it is, doesn't matter if two or three people go to prison, that's not the end of it. This is the tip of the iceberg. It's a systemic problem. The whole system has to be root and branch. But building regs has to be rewritten. It all has to be looked at again.
Yeah, the thing is, it's horrendous because that would mean millions of people having to be rehoused, and all the reconstruction that needs to be doing. Or is that because you can see it was a hot potato?
Yeah. But on that point.
Yeah.
This is what I'll tell you. What was told to me by a fire safety officer way back in 2012. I was seconded to fire safety for about a month from training because there wasn't a lot of training going on, and we went down blocks, and I was astounded at the state of the blocks in South London. Because I've been operational maybe 7 years before, and it had deteriorated significantly. And I said, "What? You know, why is this? Why? This is so bad that they shouldn't be here because the fire doors aren't up to standard." And he said, "Well, they've had the fire brigade have pushed for things. They've been told, you know, the council said we've got no money. The fire brigade said, well, yeah, but the legislation the regulations are clear. And then they've been told by government, well, so long as it's on a to-do list. So, and that's under the Labour government." So this is the other thing. I'm all for bashing the Tories. I used to be a union rep.
Yeah.
But Labour are 50% to blame for this because it's during the Labour years that a lot of this dumbing down has happened. And they're just as blame. I couldn't tell you which government the most to blame. If you put them all alongside each other, it'd be difficult to tell you who's most to blame.
But that's why there's such an eruption of anger. And when, you know, because it's seen as governments, successive governments haven't cared about the people who are in these blocks, and, you know, and the people who are in these blocks aren't the people who are living in Kensington and Chelsea, etc.
Yeah. I mean, what should have happened is after Lackenhall House in 2009, they had the inquiry, and the inquiry finished during the coalition government, the Tories, and it's that government should have turned around and said, right, okay, we've been doing things wrong, let's turn around, let's have another look at this, let's start redress it. But what they did is they actually doubled down. You had the whole bonfire of regulations. You had Cameron and, we need to get, what is it, one in and two out. We're gonna rip up all red tape. Well, if it's a red tape, red tape, it tells you to have a seatbelt. It's a red tape that puts that makes sure things aren't combustible. It's red tape that makes sure, you have I mentioned it in the book about clothing. You know, there's regulations about clothing.
Yeah.
So that if you buy a party dress, it doesn't go up in flames. And to focus on, another analogy I made was about sprinklers. So people go, I mean, I'm all for sprinklers.
Yeah.
But if governments were spent 20 years encouraging people to sell flammable party dresses, and then the answer to that is, oh, right, let's give them all sprinkler hats or make them carry around fire extinguishers.
Yeah.
That's not the point. You know, whenever I hear a politician talk about sprinklers, I'm all for sprinklers, but I'm screaming at the telly. This isn't the point. By all means, have sprinklers, but that isn't the point. The point is you've dumbed down building regs for 20, 30 years and fire safety legislation. That's the point.
Yeah.
Deal with that first. Before you fit a single sprinkler head, deal with that. Because all you'll be doing, if you fit sprinklers everywhere, all you'll be doing is punching holes through buildings and destroying the compartmentation.
And so we're back to number one. We've got 4 minutes, Tony.
Oh, sorry.
So it's all right because I know this is you know frustrating and worrying at the same time. Right, 4 minutes just about. So what are you hoping? I mean, what do we need to do to avoid future Grenfells?
Right, so I'm hoping they will rewrite building regs, especially building regs part B. They'll rewrite the fire safety regs form order. They'll bring a bit more. They'll make fire risk inspectors qualified in some way. The stay put policy is still in place in most buildings. You can have a if people don't like the stay put policy, it belongs to the building. You can get rid of it. You can have concierges. Everyone can pay a couple hundred pounds a month and have a concierges. And that, because every place that has an evacuation policy evacuates before the fire brigade turns up.
Yeah.
They don't evacuate. So have a situation where you think, because the fire brigade are geared up to respond to emergencies. They don't turn up with loads of spare people to perform evacuation. They're not in the evacuation service. We do it, but we're not.
To get to the fire, basically, as well, to get people out. Yeah.
So the worst possible situation is to say, what we're going to do is we're going to have a situation where the fire brigade have got to decide 10 minutes after the fire, when they turn up, which could be 15, 20 minutes later, but usually 10 minutes, 10 minutes after the fire starts, they're going to turn up. And then at some point after that, they're going to make the decision whether or not it's safer to put 300 people on the staircase, often the only staircase, or it's safer for people to stay put. They're going to be able to balance that risk every time and do it successfully. And I'm saying that's crazy.
I hadn't thought about that before, but you're spot on. I hadn't thought about that before, yeah.
There's reason why, I mean, I can argue about stay put policy, but there's a reason we have a stay put policy. It's because if everybody opens their doors at the same time, whilst we're gaining access, apart from the fact all the trips and falls and getting in our way, the fire, the smoke and the heat from the fire is coming up the staircase as people are coming down. And I've been on a couple of incidents where that situation would have killed people. So yes, you can get away with it sometimes. But it's like a Grenfell. Some people came down the stairs and got out. Mm. Some people came down the stairs and sadly didn't and succumbed on the stairs. Some people we rescued because of stay put, and some people sadly didn't. And I don't know the next fire. I don't know what that probability will be because it'll be a different fire. And you'd have to tell me when I make that decision, what's the chance of 50 people dying on the stairs and what's the chance of me making a successful evacuation? Because the staircase has to be free for the entire evacuation. I have to have it free of smoke and fire. And there were times in that fire when it was like they couldn't get above the 11th floor at one point, and it was 1,000 degrees. Firefighters in fire gear, in breathing apparatus, couldn't get past a certain floor, and that fluctuated. And then half an hour later, someone came down the stairs and survived because that fluctuated. And then it would be half hour later, it would be back, and you're going to say to people, right, okay, we want everyone to come down the stairs in their pyjamas and their slippers.
Mm. Carrying their pets and all the stuff they shouldn't be carrying.
And then, and then someone opens the door on the fourth floor and it's 1,000 degrees in the stairway. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah,
you know, people say these things.
It's easier in a planning meeting. Tony, I've got a minute before I get crashing into the news. I knew it was going to be. No, it's fine. You know, I knew we were going to talk about this. The book is called The Grenfell Tower Fire, A Firefighter's View. If people want to follow you online, Tony, where should they go to? I know you're on Facebook.
I'm on Facebook. I do put things on Twitter sometimes. Twitter, I don't do anything else. I'm not on Instagram or anything like that. But Facebook,
Well, listen, it's been eye-opening to me to speak to you today. Thanks to you for your time, Tony. You'll be able to order the book from our own virtual bookstore. This book is called The Grenfell Tower Fire. Next time we'll get you back and we'll talk about some history again, Tony. But this was really quite something. Thank you, Tony Sullivan. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Charles. Best of luck. Thank you.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.